Welcome to Torti Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Mem Aleph, Chapter 41. The previous chapter left us right in the middle of the intrigue of Gedaliah's court. Yochanan ben Kereach accused Yishmael ben Netanya of colluding with the king of Ammon to assassinate Gedaliah as a way of fighting the Babylonians. He impressed upon Gedaliah the seriousness of the matter and what would happen to the fledgling community in Judea if Gedaliah were to be killed. He also offered to kill Yishmael himself in secret, so no one would know. Gedaliah refused to believe Yochanan's words, preferring to give Yishmael the benefit of the doubt. Chapter 41 tells us how the story unfolds. In the first pasuk, we find out a little bit more about Yishmael ben Netanya. We read, "Vayhi b'chodesh hashvi'i, it was in the seventh month, the month of Tishrei, by Yishmael ben Netanya ben Elishama mizera hamlucha." Yishmael ben Netanya, who was from the royal family. Unlike Gedaliah, who was from the family of Shaphan, who were scribes for the king's administration, Yishmael is from the royal family itself. Rashi and Malbim note that this was actually Yishmael's motive. Watching someone who's not from the royal family lead the Jewish people elicited a strong jealousy in Yishmael. Pirkei Avot notes, in chapter 4, Mishnah 21, Rabbi Elazar HaKafar Omer HaKina V'Hatava V'Hakavod Motzi'in Et Ha'adam Min Ha'olam. Jealousy, desire, and honor. Those are the three attributes that take a person out of the world, out of this world. Seeing Gedaliah and seeing him take the leadership while he, Yishmael, was still in the country, aroused all these three attributes in Yishmael. Barbanel adds that the first time it mentions Yishmael, it does not refer to him as Mizera Hamlucha. Remember, he had joined Gedaliah for the speech where Gedaliah welcomed back all the different remnants and told them that they would be prosperous and to fill their buckets with wine, with oil, and with summer fruit. Barbanel posits that Yishmael changed since that time, and watching Gedaliah rule stirred up his jealousy and lust for power. Additionally, being from the royal family might make Yishmael more likely to disagree with Gedaliah's policy of reconciliation with the Babylonians. His whole family led the rebellion, and it was the Babylonians that destroyed his family, taking one after another into exile. When Yishmael and his men come to Gedaliah, not only does Gedaliah not take precautions, but he invites them in for a private meal, breaking bread with them, showing them his good faith, bringing them close to him in order to help bring, in his mind, all of the warring political factions together. Gedaliah's naivete has a tragic end. Yishmael kills him, murders him in cold blood, along with all the other people that are with him, including the Chaldeans that were stationed in Gedaliah's building. The Gemara in Nida 61a learns a strong lesson from this action of Gedaliah. Rava says, with regard to this prohibition against listening to malicious speech, even though one should not accept the malicious speech as true, one is nevertheless required to be concerned about the harm that might result from ignoring it. Gedaliah was told what we call lashon hara, slander, about Yishmael ben Netanya by Yochanan ben Kereach. And Gedaliah refused to believe it, and if anything, went the other way, bringing Yishmael ben Netanya close to him, having a private meeting with him, sharing a meal. Gedaliah was blinded by his good faith, by his belief in his people, and by his own attempt to rebuild the Jewish community and unite the political factions. While a person is not allowed to believe Lashon Hara, it is also important, says the Gemara, to be mindful of the consequences of not taking any precautions, based on the information that the person has. After murdering everyone in Gedaliah's immediate circle, Yishmael and his men leave the compound. At this point, since everyone inside the building is dead, no one yet knows what happened. The story gets even worse. Yishmael and his men run into a group of people. I'm reading from verse 5. Vayavo anashim mishchem mishilo umishomron shmonim ish migulche zakan ukruei begadim umitgodedim umincha ulevona biadam lahavi beit Hashem. A group of people coming from Shechem, Shilo, and Shomron. They are all with ragged clothes. They ripped their clothes and they had hurt themselves. bruised themselves as a sign of mourning over the Beit HaMikdash, and they were now bringing, on their way to bring a korban at the Beit HaMikdash. Vayitzei Yishmal v'netanya l'kratam. Yishmal goes to greet them. Min ha-mitzvah. He's coming out of mitzvah. Haloch, haloch u'bocheh. They were walking with each step. They were weeping over the destruction. These people are from Shechem, Shiloh, and Shomron. All these cities are strongholds of the northern kingdom of Yisrael. Remember, Yisrael was exiled in 722 by the Assyrians and then dispersed. So we're talking about over 100 years ago, but there were still people living there. And there were some Jews there. Yirmiyahu had spent his entire career reaching out to the people who were left after the Assyrian dispersion, along with people who had been moved by the Assyrians all over the world. But these people didn't come. They didn't join with Yirmiyahu. They didn't join with Yoshio. Only after the Churban do we see that suddenly the people change their mind. They want to connect. They want to be part of the Beit HaMikdash narrative. It's only by losing the Beit HaMikdash that they realize that they can come to the Beit HaMikdash to bring a sacrifice. Matzudot David notes that after the Churban, people still brought sacrifices on the Mizbeach at the site of the Beit HaMikdash, where the Beit HaMikdash used to be. These people who had rejected the Beit HaMikdash from the time of Yeravam ben Nevat, from the time of the split kingdom, they only realized the significance of it once it was lost. And now they were on their way not just to bring a korban, but as a sign of reconciliation, as a sign of unity that can only happen when both countries were at their lowest. It is these people that Yishmael encounters. He reaches out to them in a way that they can hear. Vayhi kifgoshotam, when he meets them, vayomer aleihem, Yishmael says to them, bo el Gedaliah ben Achikam, come to Gedaliah ben Achikam, come meet the governor. Yishmael, remember, was one of the recognized people in Gedaliah's entourage. He had just had a private meal with Gedaliah. We know afterwards he killed him, but he had also been there standing with Gedaliah at the big speech that Gedaliah gave to all the people and sent to any of the people that were dispersed to the north. So he was recognized. Plus, he was a descendant of the royal family. When the people of the north hear that Gedaliah wants to meet with them, they agree to meet with him. And it's a sign that there no longer needs to be animosity between the two factions. The 12 tribes can actually be reunited, not in the way that Yoshio dreamt it, not out of grandeur, but out of shared loss. Of course, Yishmael is not who he makes himself out to be, or the person that Gedaliah trusted him to be. Not a person reaching out his hand in peace, but he's a murderous villain who had just slaughtered the last hope of the Jewish people. Verse 7, Vayhi kevo'am el toch ha'ir, as they're coming into the middle of the city of Mitzvah, Yishmael turns, Vayishchatem Yishmael benetanya el toch habor, hu v'anashim eshir ito. The peaceful hand was actually an ambush. Yishmael and his men turn, and these people who were mourning, who were crying over the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, are killed. They're murdered by Yishmael ben Netanya, and he throws their bodies into a pit. Yishmael kills them too, either because he's just evil, or because he wants to obliterate anyone who sides with the Babylonians instead of fighting him. And here were people who didn't oppose the Babylonians. Or perhaps he hates people who didn't join in the fight for Jerusalem to begin with. Perhaps he opposed Gedaliah's call to all Israelites living in the country, even the ones who had defected, even the ones who lived in the north. We're not sure. But he does murder all of them. And he throws their bodies into a pit identified in verse 9. Hu asher asa ha-melech Asa mipnei Baasha melech Yisrael. This was the pit that Asa made as a trench, as a fortification against Baasha, the king of Israel. Otomi le Yishmael ben Netanyahu chalalim. That's where Yishmael ben Netanya threw the corpses. Now, the pit just happened to be there, but the pasuk tells us that it's also symbolic. It was a fortification that Asa, the king of Judea, built in his war against Baasha, the king of Yisrael, hundreds of years earlier. The pit was symbolic of the first civil war, of Jew against Jew, of the fissure between the North and the South. The generation before Asa and Baasha was the generation of the Piluk HaMlucha, the split of the kingdoms. At the time, Rehoboam, the son of Shlomo, was ready to go to war against Yeravam, the first king of the north, for stealing the power away from him. A Navi approached Rehoboam, and in his one great move, Rehoboam desisted and did not go to war against his brother. The next generation, however, did not heed the warning, and Asa and Baasha fought a bitter civil war all their days, a war which continued off and on during most of the time that the two kingdoms existed. Yoshio wanted to end the animosity and rejoin the tribe. This was the chance, now, from a place of destruction. But Yishmael ben Netanya instead decided to follow a new path of destruction, of wanton murder that characterized the worst of Judean society. First, he murdered Gedaliah and his administration. And then his next move was to seal off any further opportunity for growth by murdering the innocent mourners on their way to the destroyed Beit HaMikdash. Some of the people who are about to be murdered beg Yishmael to save their lives. They bribe him with promises of wealth. Verse 8, Vasara nashim nimtzu'ubam, 10 of the men, vayomru al Yishmael, al timitenu, don't kill us, Yishmael, ki yesh lanu matmonim basadeh, we have things that are hidden in the fields, chitim, sorim, shemen, utvash. We have money. We have the equivalent of money. We have wheat. We have barley. We have oil. We have honey. We have food you can have. And if you kill us, you'll never know where it is because it's hidden. Rafeni Lau explains that the fact that Yishmael doesn't kill them in order to discover their riches undermines any ideologies that Yishmael may have thought that he had. At the end of the day, he doesn't care about policy. He doesn't care about being from the royal family or fermenting rebellion against the Babylonians. At the end of the day, he cares about himself and his own power and his own greed. Once he spares these people for his greed, he can no longer claim the high road, even to himself, of politics or ideals. He exposes himself as having committed the whole murderous episode only for self-aggrandizement and greed. Yishmael then, after killing these people, goes and captures all the people living in Mitzpah. And you can imagine it wasn't so hard to capture. These were the weakest people of the country who had just been through the Chorban, who are now dependent on Gedaliah. So he rounds them up. And including in this people are the daughters of the royal family. And he takes them as captives, heading on his way to Ammon. They're stopped in Givon by Yochanan ben Kereach, who finally hears about what's happening in Mitzpah. Yochanan fights Yishmael and prevails. Yishmael and a few men escape and run away to Ammon, while Yochanan reorganizes the remnant of the Judeans who have now gone through not one, but two traumas. Yochanan now is the leader, and he has a choice. He can return to Mitzpah and try to reconcile with the Babylonians, to rebuild what Gedaliah has started, or he can take these poor people and run away. The first choice is perilous. Gedaliah was the appointed governor by the Babylonians. They might be furious with all of the Jews at his murder, even though none of them were directly responsible, and Yochanan even took on Yishmael. However, the Babylonians might not make that distinction. Furthermore, Yishmael had killed some Babylonian soldiers along with Gedaliah. How forgiving would they be? The second choice is to run away to what would seem to be a stable country. Egypt had stayed out of the war since it was beaten in Carchemish all the way back in the time of Yoshio. As soon as Babylonia won, it retreated into its land, which was not ravaged by war like Judea and Samaria were. Now, going to Egypt also had a downside. A king, we learn in Sefer Dvarim, is told not to have too many horses so that he won't be tempted to go back to Egypt. In his book of mitzvot, Ramban writes that the prohibition against going back to Egypt is because of the terrible behavior of the Egyptians. It was a hotbed at the time of idolatry and corruption. Yochanan and the other leaders decide that they've had enough of the ravaged land of Judea, and their fear of retribution from the Babylonians outweighs their perhaps moral hesitation of the land of Egypt, where they can slide into an already built-up society and not have to rebuild one on their own. The parak ends with Yochanan and his people standing in the city of Geirut on their way down to Egypt. In summary, a lot happens in this parak. We start off with Gedaliah at his strength, bringing in Yishmael ben Netanya, hoping to win him over, breaking bread with him. The parak then moves to the murder of Gedaliah, his administration, the murder of the mourners from the north on their way to bring korbanot at the Beit HaMikdash, and then the capture of all the people of Mitzpah, stopped in Givon by Yochanan ben Kereach, and then the decision for the last remnants of the Jewish people to leave Malchut Yudah, to leave the land of Judea, and to go down to Egypt. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilo Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Zvi Yosef.